This is Pivot Perspectives with Chris O'Byrne, the show that takes you around the world to share interviews with some of the most successful and relevant people on the planet. Hear their stories and get the most important business lessons they've learned on their road to success, and get exclusive access on how to implement their success into your life and business. Pivot Perspectives is brought to you by the Strategic Advisor Board and your host, Chris O'Byrne.
Dr. Bruce Parker, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. Good to be here.
I have so many questions I want to dig into, but let's start by going back to childhood. And what was a defining moment or moments that kind of shaped who you became today?
I don't know if that's a good question or not. I love the question, though, because I look at my childhood, and it was so different than how it ended up. I was kind of, rebel type guy when I was younger. I didn't like following instructions very well. I didn't like it when people, told me I did things wrong. I mean, I was kind of like a little rebellion guy, but I do remember when I got out of school, I wasn't going to go to college. Are you kidding? I've had enough school. I've just graduated, and I got out in this world. And I realized it was pretty lonely. And I started looking around, I went to work for my father. And my father was very conservative. He had a trucking company. So I basically started off as a truck driver. It happened later on in life when I was hitting the wall on running my businesses. And I said, man, this is hard. I'm going to get out of this thing and go back to driving a truck. That was fun. So I almost quit practicing to go back to driving a truck again. But anyway, so in that situation, I was following, I went towards my father, and I got very frustrated because I thought he could be doing, I kept seeing all his, where he'd be unloading trucks and stuff like that. He only served one market. He only hauled for Safeway. And that was a grocery store chain. And so everything he did was for grocery chain. And what I noticed was when they had a change, it came down and they quit using him, and they would replace things he was doing in his company and with their own businesses. And I said, well, this is not smart. I mean, even as an 18-year-old, I noticed, that the idea of having all your eggs in one basket may not be the best. So, that became the demise as Safeway expanded, they started taking over their own hauls, and my dad was hauling all their private stuff. So we'd go out to the farm and pick up produce and take it back to the warehouse, things like that. And so I noticed that. And so I got real antsy. I wanted to start marketing. I had no idea what marketing was, but I kept thinking, I said, I should go out and drum up some new business because this thing's not going well. So that question comes back to what I got out of my youth. I was pretty observant, and I could figure things out because I observed with no background, no nothing. I observed it. Don't put your eggs in all the same basket. Number one. Number two. He wouldn't market. He didn't want to market. He goes, no, we have all the business we need, and I realized that you had to continue marketing. So that was my big childhood lessons. And do I have time for one more thing?
Absolutely.
My biggest lesson, which just came to me, it might seem like a weird answer, but I was going through, I started having this desire that I wanted to have more in life. And so I was going through the newspaper one day and I saw this ad, have everything you want. I go, that's me. I want that. What is it? And it was an advertisement for a company called Hypnos Morpheus. And it was a husband and wife, Bill Barris, and Bill and Carol Barris. And they were hypnotists. And they were doing a program, that would teach you positive thinking and all these types of things. And so I went to the indoctrination of it because it sounded like have everything you want. And they handed me this crystal on a string. I go, this is weird. So I said, hold this crystal on the string and then hold it down by your sternum here, and just let it hang. So I did that. Now I want you to visualize that crystal going back and forth, forward and backwards. I looked down, oh my gosh, it was going back and forth, not realizing I was sending a command from my body to do this, you know, to do a slight thing. And then I said, now stop it. And it stopped. Now have it go in a circle. So I was sold. This is it. What did I do? What did I learn? You know, and they told me that basically, you know, that you can create anything in your life if you put your mind to it. So I learned that at 18 years old. And was it a great lesson? Yes. Was it a dangerous lesson? Absolutely. I started thinking I could do anything, you know, and so that was the foundation of my entrepreneur, you know, spirit, because, you know, I went through their course. I learned about, you know, all the positive thinking and stuff, mind control, things like that they were teaching. And I took it out and I've used it my entire life. And to the point that I remember their name, you know, that's why I didn't believe
significant.
That's why I didn't believe right now that it came to my mind why I forgot about it for a second, because I still give them credit, you know, to anything positive in my life anyway. And I curse myself for anything negative, because I know that anything negative in my life is something I did.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Well, at least you're taking ownership. So when did you decide you wanted to become a chiropractor?
So coming out of school, my only job I ever had, or coming, you know, into life, the only job I ever had working for my dad, I decided when he didn't want to grow his business that I didn't want to, and I saw him always cussing about this problem and that problem. And I said, this isn't look like something I want to do. So I decided early on, I didn't want to take over the business. So in the meanwhile, through Carol Barris and Hippus Morpheus, I manifested a Porsche. And meaning that was my first goal. What do you want in life? I want a Porsche, you know? And so, I had one in 6 weeks. Now it didn't materialize. Basically I put it in my consciousness. I want to get a Porsche, 18 years old. Come on. And then I started realizing I could actually afford one if I just moved some things around. Before I knew it, I bought one. So, and I got one and I joined this club that we did club racing. So I met a guy, he was a financial planner and an insurance salesman, this type of things. And I met him and he liked me because I seemed pretty aggressive for a young kid, you know, and I already bought my own Porsche, something like that. He recruited me to come in to be to work in his business. And so while I was there, I also hadn't started there yet. I went and bought I started a stereo store. I sold stereos. In the meantime, you know, I'm talking, I think about things when you ask these questions and timeline gets off a little bit, but before I actually went to this guy, I did the stereo business and, it got taken over. That's when all of a sudden, you know, these big stereo businesses came out, you know, and they were selling things for less than I could buy them wholesale for, you know, so I wasn't really, that was never a successful venture for me. So I went in and closed the stereo store. But in the meanwhile, I met a chiropractor who's next door. And he wanted to put together a multimedia program for education to his patients. So I helped him do that. And I learned the story. I learned about health from a different vantage than medicine. The medical approach, you got a problem, take something. The chiropractic approach, you got a problem, there's something underneath that's causing it. And so I adapted this idea called root cause. So I look at everything, you know, like if you're having a headache, there's a cause for that. If you're having, you know, anything going on in your body, there's a root cause. And so chiropractors did that. And that resonated with me for some reason. I think it was consistent with some of the thinking that I was learning through this Hippus Morpheus course, you know, as far as, you know, we have more responsibility for our life than we think we do. And so I adapted that idea and I started going to this chiropractor. I had a problem and it got better. And I got to know him through the media program and I liked the message. So he got me into the school. He got me, he was friends with the president there. And I got basically the idea they're changing their admission rules. And he called me up. He says, you still want to be a chiropractor? I go, oh, yeah, I'm still thinking about it. He goes, well, if you want to be one, your next chance is going to be ending in 2 weeks. I go, what? You know, and I was working for this other company right now, you know, doing the financial planning and things. And he told me that he can get me in, but the next class is starting in 2 weeks. I had to get back to Iowa from California, you know, and so sold the Porsche, bought an old Volvo, packed my bags and left. And I got there and I arrived in town, looked at it, turned over, you know, got me in a hotel, lay on the bed and just cried. What the heck am I doing in Iowa, Davenport, Iowa? And but that's kind of the process, how I started liking chiropractic and how I got into it. And then I went through that college, did really well, came out, and then life began.
Is that when things just, opportunities opened up for you, especially entrepreneurially?
No, I can't really say anything opened up for me, because the bottom line was, I realized I was going to open a business. And the one guy that sent me to college, you know, he wanted to hire me. And I go, I don't want to work for anybody. I go, you know, I want to do my own thing. Not a good idea, by the way. So it's okay to learn. So I found a place, rented it, and there was a chiropractor there before. So it was pretty much, you know, it had the design was all set and everything like that. The floor plan was set. But I had no idea why, because I didn't know really the system to use and like that. So, but I thought because the chiropractor was there, I was going to sit there and get all those old patients. No, there's that positive thinking again that got in my trouble. So I opened up the office, got it going. Day one, not a patient. Day two, day three, 2 weeks into it. My very first month, I saw one person at 12:50 for an office call. Second month, I saw him twice, $25. So the first month, I made $12.50. Second month, I made $25. So that's my humble beginnings. 6 months, oh my six goodness. Months into it, I hit $700, not thousand, $700. And I realized that I said, I don't know the business I'm in. And I go, I wonder if anybody else like me. So, you know, I start working really hard on trying to figure this thing out, how to make the business work. And as I started making the business work, it finally did. I went to a few seminars. There wasn't a lot of them back then. I went to a few seminars, got some ideas, came back, applied them. And then I created some of my own systems that I thought would be good, ways to attract patients, ways to, you know, communicate, things like this. And because, you know, chiropractic was pretty much known as a bunch of quacks that crack backs. So that was the back in the, this was 76. And we, you know, the public didn't have a clue what we did. And so how do I promote something that no one wants? No one wants to pay for, and they don't understand why they even would want it. And so I had a big learning curve. I started working on, you know, messaging to markets, things like this. And I finally got, 3 years later, I finally became an overnight success. And things started working pretty good. Then with that, now your question, did your entrepreneurial opportunities open up? Yes. Because at that point, I had something. I learned a system that I came out of school knowing nothing about how to run a business to running one pretty well. And I figured that other people would want it too. So I wanted to test my system. So I opened a second office. And it went right out. It built right away. It built fast. And I go, really? Let me try this again. Maybe it's a fluke. So I went and opened another one. In 9 years, I had 13 clinics. And in the meanwhile, I realized, you know, that I had something, my entrepreneur spirit. And so I started, you know, coaching other chiropractors, helping them in their practices. And that was my next enlightening thing, was because they didn't think the business was necessary. What are you talking about? You're going to teach me business? I'm a chiropractor, man. I don't need business. I just need my hands. That's all I need. You know, and so they're out there trying to promote, you know, what they do rather than why they do it. And I watch these guys, you know, pretty much fall on their face. You know, at that point, there's a lot of chiropractors today that make really, really good businesses. And there's way more that don't. still, you know, and and when I've mentioned to a few people, the chiropractors, that they need help on the business side, and they go, "What are you talking about? My chiropractor, he sees patients all day. They're everywhere." I go, "Yeah, how's he doing?" He goes, "Well, he's always stressed out." I do know that, you know. But the bottom line is these people have seen these guys as being busy because the public now knows what chiropractic is, kind of, not really perfectly, but they have an idea, I think, and they go to them readily. And the problem was insurance started accepting them. So people will go to them now as a as just another medical thing that somebody else pays for. And so the doctors didn't think it was even necessary to have to teach them really that much about it. They just went there and treated their aches and pains. To the point, since insurance would cover, people had an ache and pain. They said that chiropractors could fix aches and pains, and insurance will cover it. That became the public perception of our business, which is not true. Bottom line is, I don't even accept insurance. I don't practice anymore, by the way, but I did it for over almost 50 years. At the same time, I'm coaching these guys on how to run their businesses, because the bottom line is the public still doesn't really get a clue, and we can show them how it all works. And then I want them to understand it well enough they'll be willing to pay for it, which is a different method. But if someone has no skin in the game, if they just say, "Well, just bill my insurance," then they'll come as long as their insurance allows them to. But when the insurance says things like, "No more care necessary," they come to me. "Hey, I can't come anymore. Our insurance says no." You know, they don't fight the idea. They go, "Well, insurance, they're the ones that, have all the control." And that's when I realized that I had an insurance secretary running my business. That's why I quit doing insurance.
So if I were a new chiropractor and I had no clue how to start getting business, what would you tell me?
First of all, I would I go to the bottom. Well, what's your philosophy of health? What are you going to try to sell, so to speak? Because there's a lot of different ideas. Some chiropractors come out of school with the idea they're going to be a sports medicine doctor, and they're going to go and sit on the sidelines of the football field, and they're going to tape people's injuries. That's not chiropractic. We're good at that type of stuff, but that's not really what they do. And what happens is some of them do that, and then they upset the physician of the team. And then the guy said, "We don't need this guy around anymore," because they didn't come on and do what they're supposed to do. But for a new guy, I would look at the foundational. What do you want to do? What is your philosophy of health? Number two, how good are you at it? How much practice do you have? And have you ever practiced at all? Well, I did in clinic. I saw a few people. I go, "What's your background in business?" Well, I have none. I would encourage them to find a doctor anywhere in the world. I don't, sometimes better than where they want to live, but go to a place and work with a doctor that does your techniques, your philosophies, and you can sit there and learn from them and follow their system. Once you've done that, I had a lot of guys come work for me when I was young, and I opened up a lot of businesses. by default, because they'd come in, they'd learn my system, and they go down the street, So I had to build in, I later had to build some protection in. They couldn't do that anymore. But at one time, I was trying to help them out, and they learned my system and did really well. So I'd tell them to go and work with somebody, number one, very first step. Step two, learn how to sign clients. Because a patient will walk in, most patients will walk in with their idea that I got a hitch in my get along, and some name.
Yes.
Can you crack it real quick and make me feel better? Sure, I can do that. Because they're so excited somebody's coming and see them. They go in there and they do a quick treatment on them. "How's that feel?" "That feels better. Thanks a lot." And they're gone. They've not learned how to, that hitch in there, they call it a hitch in their get along. That's a low back. They got a leader in their neck, they say. But I've learned some colloquial terms over the years.
I bet.
So they got this thing in their neck, and that's a symptom. There's a root cause of that symptom, and these doctors got to learn how to sit there and communicate the necessity of people to understand that when people have an ache or pain or a symptom or a problem, it's not the problem. It's usually never the problem. It's always the result of something deeper. And their job now is to dig down and learn how to, you know, properly examine the patient, to use the right diagnostic tests, things like this, and determine exactly what's causing the problem. And then it's going to be structural. And most structure takes at least 6 to 9 months to change. So they're going to have to put that person that wants a quick fix into a transformational type, you know, care program. And so those are all things they need to learn before they open a business.
Now, before we started recording, we were talking about the Mayo Clinic, and you said that you admired their system of running a clinic, especially because it matched so well with yours. What were those things, those pieces that you were seeing?
What I mentioned to you is I was given a tour by the CEO of Mayo in Rochester, Minnesota. I was in the Twin Cities speaking for a college, and the college president and me as well got invited over there. So I went inside, and what I noticed was, number one, I expected to see everything being stainless steel and white. I go, Mayo Clinic, this is the edifice of medicine, man. It's going to be stainless steel and white everything. I go inside, it's like a hotel. The colors are beautiful. They had art on the wall. They had a budget of, I think it was like $3 million a year to buy art, you know, for that place. And you go into the treating rooms, and the if you go to a medical doctor, it's usually butcher paper, you know, that paper that you sit on, Egyptian cotton. You know, you open up their drawers, everything is like, you know, lined out. You know, I mean, the organization was like impeccable. I mean, I couldn't believe it. So if a guy wanted something, you know, I've been to a lot of doctors. They go, I need this. Where's their chart? You know, and they start looking around the office. And so the patient's sitting in the thing, and they're walking around the office looking for their darn chart. Now they got, you know, they're using computers. But at one time, you know, and what I learned was, Mayo Clinic had been open for, at that time, about 60 years. There was 5 charts missing.
Oh, man. In 60 years.
Yeah, and there's 5 charts missing. And they had this system that went through the whole place where you put a chart up on this little trolley, and it takes it to where you want to go. Back to the records thing, whatever. The paper. Was actually the paper they used was actually this is an advertisement for Mayo, but the their paper was the same paper they used to make money. You know, the money paper.
Yes.
It gets It gets ruined. You know, and most, you know, paper gets torn and all kinds of stuff. So their paper was actually the same stuff they used to make money with, you know, dollar bills, things like that. And so therefore, they didn't rip. It didn't get all, you know, messed up. And so it was just their attention to detail, and their systems were so clean. That's what I was talking about.
So when did you, I mean, you've been helping people with their health business, especially chiropractics. When did you switch to helping people in business overall, not just in a specific niche?
1984, April 4th. How would I know that number? I basically, what I realized was that I had opened up a number of clinics. I was managing these doctors from afar. I was taking care of my own patients. I was seeing actually about 120 to 30 office visits a day with people. So I was seeing a lot of people. And one day, that day in April, I was seeing a patient, and I started repeating myself again. Because I wasn't focused. I'm admitting this in front of God and everybody, you know, that I basically was not on purpose that day. My mind was so full of what I was doing and taking care of so many things that I just kind of got in my mind, I guess, when I was seeing this patient. I try to kind of almost meditate with the patient, you know, and try to calm my mind. And I got myself into such a trance that I started getting in my mind and kind of lost consciousness a little bit. And I realized I was a detriment to the office, not a benefit. So I decided at that time that I would retire. And then what would I do with myself? Well, I'm going to teach people. I'm going to do full-time consulting because I know I can help a lot of people learn how to run their business better. To this day, I would almost guarantee, well, if you saw my LinkedIn thing, it says, I'll find you $10,000 recurring in your business in a 45-minute conversation. That's a promise. I'll walk into any office and get them to show them at least whether they're losing at least $10,000 a month of reoccurring income just by the way they're doing their business right away. That's my foundational, prayer or promise, because I can make things more efficient. And so I decided to do that. And that was back in 1992.
Got it. So I'm glad you brought up about your LinkedIn, because there's also something in your signature that I wanted to dig deeper into, your email signature. I can show any business owner in less than 45 minutes how to triple their current number of leads, double their sales, and increase their annual revenue by $30,000 to $50,000 or more without spending an additional cent on marketing or advertising. So give me an overview of how that works.
Well, first of all, the key...
What are you looking
the
for?
The key words right there, additional. If a person is marketing right now, number one, I will show them how to convert leads. The person comes in and how to get, attraction is the first thing we work on, attracting new clients. Conversion, converting them from their medical thinking, like I got a hitch in my get-along or a leader in my neck, I got a quick ache or pain, get me out of here quick, I just want a quick crack type thing. I'll teach them how to move them from that point of mindset into, I want to transform my health, I introduce them into a transformational program. So the lead conversion to wanting them to listen to what we can do to sit there and transform their health, that's going to probably take an average patient for the first year from maybe $500 to maybe $5,000. And is that just a scam to sell people? No, because the bottom line is they pay for it in cash. They understand what they're getting. They understand what we're doing, and they want it to the point they'll pay for it out of pocket. That's why I use insurance sometimes to help them along if they need to, but I don't let the insurance control any case, because insurance is built by the Blues for the Blues. It's basically a medical deal, right? And so it's all based on getting people out of pain. If you look at the medical guideline, the insurance guidelines, it says any service done to restore or improve health is not considered reimbursable. They want to mitigate pain. So if I tell somebody we're going to transform somebody's spine so they no longer have these problems, no, we don't do that. First of all, that's not even proven it can work. That's not medical thing. It's experimental. You got a back pain, you can get 9 visits, to get them out of pain. Well, 9 visits is going to get rid of some of initial inflammation, but certainly not to sit there and redo the structure. It'd be like your car. If your car right now, the front wheel is shaking as you drive down the road, and you start noticing that it's wearing out, the tire's wearing out. And so you take...
Replace the tires.
Exactly. So you go into the dryer thing and go, this front tire, man, keeps going out. We'll give you a new tire. They put a new tire on, goes back and sits there and shakes. Well, you understand right now, and you're not even a chiropractor, by gosh, and you understand that the function has been altered. It's no longer going down the road easily, and so it's under stress all the time. A lot of people say, I got a bad back. A bad back? God doesn't give out bad backs. He gives out, it's a miracle what the spine is. What you got basically is some dysfunction. And so you got overuse syndrome. And athletes always pulling a hamstring muscle. Same one every time. Why? Structure's altered. and he's overusing that area when he puts a lot of pressure to it, and it goes out. Therefore, he's got a bad hip. No, he doesn't. He's got a misaligned spine in most cases. So did I get off your question? I think I did.
No, but in a good way. I'm all with you on this one. I have never been a fan of that aspect of Western medicine.
Okay, so what was the question back? Give me back, please. I got off on my tangent.
Well, let's go back to another part of your
I know what it was.
Of your promise. You go ahead, and then I'll go a little deeper.
Okay, so the LinkedIn questions. So basically,
yeah.
By the way we onboard people, by the way we educate, and by the way we recommend, I call it enroll. I enroll people into my healthcare philosophy to go from aches and pains and feeling bad. Just because you're 35 doesn't mean you have to be sick now, or not because you're 45 or because you're 55. The body's designed to live a long time, and therefore, I mean, look at me, I'm still alive. Even though I got signs of age, I got plenty of energy, and my body works really well, on, because that's how it's designed to do. So that's how we do those numbers you're asking about. We increase their income. We increase all those things because we get them enrolled in our program, and they then come in and enroll to it. And I got about a 500% increase in their overall practice in 6 months.
So what are one of the ways that you help people increase their leads or triple their leads?
What I do is I triple their leads through messaging to the market. I built all my clinics by doing I used to do dinner banquets at one time. That was later, but I would go to whatever type of a social club they have or networking meetings that I would speak, and people would get intrigued and they'd want to come and talk to me. I gave an offer to come meet me. So I built, I got a lot of people. I used to average. I also went to businesses and got businesses, to refer. This one business, Cisco. Is it Cisco? It was an insurance company.
Yeah.
I think it was Cisco in their Rancho Bernardo office, something like that. And one of my patients, their mother worked there, and in the HR department, she said that their biggest problems are carpal tunnel syndrome, and they're sending people out for surgery. I go, really? I go, have them send me their next two. Just give me two. She goes, what do you mean? I'll treat them for free, but I will give me two people you're ready to send to surgery, which is irreversible. Give them to me and let me show them my results. And so I started getting a lot of referrals from Cisco after that.
Imagine that,
because we fix every one of them. And so by going out and doing, I call it guerrilla marketing, going out there and getting in the people's face. When the computers came, I was already out of business. So I never had the aid of social media and all that stuff. I did everything, my way. And because I could triple it back then, I can certainly do it now with, because I send the same message, on the internet. I'm talking to a guy right now in Minnesota. Come on.
I know. Yeah, it's so much easier, and still people struggle because they haven't learned how to work. They haven't learned how to work smart.
There's a lot of fear.
Yeah. Yes, there is.
In my industry, there's a lot of fear about people talking about what they do, thinking that somebody might make fun of them. I hate to say it, but it's the truth, and I know it's the truth because I've lived it, man. I've been around people. I had one chiropractor. I couldn't get him to say. I said, what do you do? He goes, well, I crack backs. I fix backs. No, what are you? What's your profession? I'm a doctor. Come on, man. What's your real profession? I'm a doctor that fixes backs. I could not, he would not say the word chiropractor. He was so afraid. He was so afraid of the public perception being true. He believed it so deeply. And you know how I got this patient, this client? He certainly didn't come to a chiropractic seminar. I got his wife heard me speak, called me up, and said, "Man, I think you could help my husband." I go, "What's his problem?" I go, "He just doesn't get it. I don't really know what his problem is." I talked to him on the phone, and that's when I was trying to talk to him. I couldn't get him to even admit that he was a chiropractor. This is like a message going out to the world right now, which I feel bad about. At the same time, though, I want you to understand the chiropractic, you know, is foundationally not the practitioner. It's a science, philosophy, and art that has changed the world. If you look at everything that happens today in wellness care, the root of it is down to the idea of getting to the root cause of a problem. I pretty much think the chiropractic is the granddaddy of all wellness. And it's just, and now people are taking wellness to a different level. I do body work. What's body work? You know, well, we massage.
Yes.
Well, so you're rubbing the pain, but you certainly aren't, you know, transforming the problem. You know, people are treating pain thinking that's called health. Well, pain is a sign of saying is something's wrong. You know, correcting the cause of that, what's causing something's wrong, that's doing something. And that's what chiropractors do.
I remember when I grew up in rural Minnesota in farm country in the, you know, the 70s and very early 80s. And we had a relative once who revealed to the family that she had gone to see a chiropractor. And everybody in the family laughed at her. And it was just, she was ridiculed. And that stuck with me for a long time. And it wasn't until I became, you know, that I did my own research and became so disillusioned with the typical Western approach to medicine that that I opened myself back up again. So, yeah, there still is a stigma. It's not as bad as it used to be, but it's still lingering there. So what are some valuable lessons you've learned over the years?
My valuable lessons, number one, is where I'm coming from. So let's say we've been talking about chiropractic. Let's talk about you being a patient. So my valuable lesson here, number one, I need to know who I am and what I'm about, and what my goal is. So when I take on a new patient, I've got to understand what the benefits are. I don't talk to them about getting out of pain. I talk to them about, you know, what would you like your life to look like? You know, what would a healthy life look for you? You go, well, you know, I've been having this hitch in my get along, and I can't walk in the park anymore, and I can't go down. So I said, you know, so is walking in your park your goal? Well, I'd like to walk in the park. I said, well, what else would you like to do? So I get them thinking about benefits versus treating a symptom. So if I do anything in business, I walk in, what do we want to do in this business? What are you trying to do right now? I need more new patients. For what? Why do you need patients? So I can make some money. Oh, so is your goal to get patients or to make money? Well, I need to get patients to make money. I go, but what's your real goal? Well, I guess it's to make money. I said, so you're in it just for the money? Oh, no, no, no. I'm not in it for the money. I'm here to save people. Oh, I get it. So number one, I understand now what they're thinking. They're thinking about the fear. This would be ridiculed that they're trying to make money off of sick people or whatever. I go, so what you want to do is you want to have a successful business that will attract people that can use your services and be willing to pay for it. Well, that works. I go, okay. So I really get down to the point of trying to get people or myself to understand the real benefit of what we're trying to do. You know, and when I'm doing a talk right now, I bring in, notice how I snuck in my philosophy on healthcare today. You know, you're asking me about my childhood, bringing in my entrepreneurial things, which is important for business, but I get down to what I consider my root cause. And my root cause is to find the foundational challenge in anything. If I walk into a business when they're having problems with their employees, it's not the employees, it's usually the training. It's usually, you know, or the ownership or the managership, or it's who's directing that person to be a crappy employee. You know, there's all these things. So that's that's what I look for. I look for the root cause of everything, and then try to understand what the outcome should look like, and then reverse engineer what it should look like down to what steps I need to take to build that into happening. That's how I got to the point where I learned how to communicate better with patients. I looked at the root cause they were having, and they didn't understand it. And what they want, I had to get them really understanding what they really wanted, and not to be out of pain. But what would that mean to be out of pain? And once I understood that, then I would sit there and I thought about my communication to them, how I had to do it in a way that they would finally understand it and be willing to go through it. Because a lot of people don't want to do things just to do it. I mean, I don't want to go to a doctor just to have a visit. You know, if I'm going to go to a doctor, I want to know why I'm there and how long it will take me and all these types of things. So I build that into my business philosophies now. And that's how I run a business. I walk in, I look at all the out points, and then I go, okay, I just keep that to myself. What's going on? What do you need? And they always say the same thing. I need more new patients. That's code for I need more money.
Yeah.
Which is that's code for I don't know how to run a business. You know, and it just keeps going on.
So who are some mentors that were important for you along the way?
My most important mentor was a man named Bill Flintham. That was a guy I told you about that I worked for in a financial thing. We worked together for probably 30 years. And as far as I learned a lot of the business acumen stuff, because he was like I am. He works with people. He goes, he was coaching like, he said, I met this dentist today, 52 years old, doesn't have a pot to pee in. And he's 52, he wants to retire. You know, he should have done this, and this all the way up. You know, so his whole thing was that's where I got my brashness from, I guess, was from him, because I would look at things as they were, and he would too, and he would basically rebuild it. I mean, he'd sit there and get people on a cash basis. He'd get them understanding the cost of doing business. He'd learn, like he'd say, you're buying a Porsche? What's that going to cost you? Oh, back in those days, it was 10 grand. He goes, 10 grand? No. What's it cost to put gas in a Porsche? What's it cost to put have it serviced? How often do you have it serviced? What's the cost of parts? And he goes, and he looked it up. He says, it'll cost you another $5,000 a year to maintain the darn thing. So now you're $10,000 that you could have invested into real estate, which you didn't. Now you're sitting, now it's going to cost you $5,000 a year penalty. You know, but that's where I got my thinking from. And then I tried to refine it over the years to be a little less, you know, in your face. But the idea is looking at the whole function. So Bill Flintham, and secondly, was a man, the founder of Palmer College of Chiropractic, B.J. Palmer. I never met him. My field doctor knew him well, and I knew things through my field doctor, which is his name was Earl Bush. So Earl Bush, B.J. Palmer, and the knowledge of B.J. Palmer through Earl Bush, and then my business side. That's chiropractic. My business side was from Bill Flintham, who's like 80.
Excellent. Now. It's still going strong. So what are some parting words of wisdom you'd like to leave us with?
My only words of wisdom basically is number one, understand what you really want and then how to get it and then take action on it. You know, which sounds kind of like altruistic or whatever, but as an example, you know, you may not think about retiring. You know, you're 30 years old right now, and you got a whole life to live. So why in the heck would you save money for retirement? Well, I'm here to say that you get to retirement age. I approve of it. And if you've planned for it, retirement's awesome. If you haven't planned for it, it is not good. You know, so I want people to look at their finances in reality, because you can retire rich any job you have if you look at in reality. I know a guy right now that got rich. Basically, he was a car salesman. He's now worth $4.6 billion, and he teaches wealth creation. And his philosophies, I can't say, are just like mine, because he has a better example of those philosophies. But a lot of what he teaches us are things that I learned through Bill. You know, his name's Grant. You know, so people say they don't need money. They're wrong. People say you shouldn't do things for money. They're wrong. Because the bottom line is, you know, I can say I've been rich and I've been poor, and rich is better. But rich doesn't buy you happiness. It's what you can do if you're financially solvent. It's a freedom that you have. And freedom is what life's all about, in my opinion. So I would start, you know, at a young age looking at how to build freedom. And that's going to be by having a strong foundation, and know what you want and stick with it. So if you have ideas that people are that you know are right for you, you feel good about, and somebody else walks up to you and says, "You're doing what?" Like you're laughing at your aunt because she's going to see a chiropractor. You know, your aunt, did she get better?
You know, I don't even remember because I went into the Air Force and left home.
But what happened in most situations, she would have quit and never got better because of public perception. So believe in yourself, you know, and stand firm to your own beliefs. And if someone's giving you advice, know what their credentials are for that advice. So a person's telling you, you know, go buy a house. Really? Is a house the best investment for everybody on the planet? Well, they say it is because they go up in value. In some states, they do. But what's the cost of maintenance? What's the cost of, you know, insurance? What's the cost of, you know, deferred maintenance and everything? What if that money could have been put into passive income, you know, source, some level? You know, it could have made you way more than a house. But the house gives you, it enhances your life. And so I recommend, you know, right now that you look at things that enhance your freedom. Once your freedom's enhanced, then you do any bad financial mistake you want because you've already got, you know, your freedom in place.
That is great advice. Thank you, Dr. Parker, for coming on the show today. This was great wisdom today. Thank you
for saying that, and I appreciate you even acknowledging me. So
you got
thanks
it.
A lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thanks for listening to Pivot Perspectives with your host, Chris O'Byrne. Please leave your feedback and visit strategicadvisorboard.com to get the latest and greatest business advice on the planet. Follow us on social media for updates, and we will see you on the next episode.